Hi there, I'm Lewis Foster, a journalist up here at Manx Radio, and welcome to this edition of the Manx Newscast. In the past 4 years, seven Manx residents have died in cases of self-neglect. A serious case management review written by independent author Sylvia Manson has been published examining the circumstances around the end of their lives, what agencies on the island could have done better, and how they can learn from it. The seven people have been given pseudonyms for the purpose of this report: Robin, Andrea, Emma, Thomas, James, Margaret and Harriet. Their ages range from their 80s down to their 30s. Each person's death, the report says, was under very sad circumstances where areas such as personal hygiene, dietary and health needs all fell below what would be considered acceptable standards. Self-neglect, it says, may also relate to a lack of care to one's environment, such as unhygienic living conditions and clutter arising from hoarding. There is at times also a refusal to accept aid or advice from the services on offer. The review looks at the last 2 years of their lives. I'll read some to you now, but they contain details some listeners may find distressing. Robin, a man in his 80s, died in December of 2021 from hypothermia in the house he was born in here on the island. He's the primary case in this review and the person whose death sparked the serious case management review. He was on the radar of social services for more than two decades. The Isle of Man Safeguarding Board will undertake an SCMR only when there is concern over how the board and other agencies work together to safeguard an individual who's later died or suffered serious harm and where abuse or neglect is known or suspected. Robin's family home, it's said, used to be kept in a pristine condition, but at the time of his death had fallen into disrepair and had become unsanitary and unsafe. The floorboards, walls and chimney were crumbling, there was no heat or hot water, and the only source of electricity was a single socket. He had sores on his legs from sleeping on a mattress where the padding had been chewed away by mice and other rodents. Robin became known to adult social care after being referred by his GP in 2001 when it was noted he was living in squalor and resisted help and support. He had no family on the Isle of Man, but a cousin living in the UK kept in touch and tried to offer and find support. Despite appearing to be financially capable, Robin was said to be reluctant to pay for any services or even put the heating on in his home. He worried about money and would salvage out-of-date food from supermarket bins. In the two decades that followed, the review details how services tried but ultimately failed to help him. And looking back on Robin's death, the review finds missed opportunities, limited mental health support, and evidence that practitioners became desensitized and blunted to his day-to-day experience. It suggests more could have been done to negotiate small steps towards change. Next is the man known as Thomas, who was only in his 30s when he passed away in June 2020 after an overdose of venlafaxine whilst under the influence of alcohol. He's the youngest of the seven individuals. It's not clear, the report states, that he intended to die, but at the time of his death he'd been neglecting self-care and was living in very poor and unhygienic conditions. He was living alone after separating from his wife and had a long history of anxiety and depression. Like Robin, Thomas was in contact with support services. He was well known to mental health services and the drug and alcohol team. It was noted the services were responsive to him, and prior to his death, the report finds there were no concerns that indicated a need for a safeguarding response. Then there's Margaret, a European migrant to the Isle of Man who died in her 80s in March 2021 of hypothermia after a fall in her unheated house. Unlike Robin or Thomas, though, she was unknown to any services on the island, nor was she registered with a GP. The coroner says Margaret fell through the net of support that might have been available. Separated from her husband and living alone, the report details how Margaret's life changed dramatically following a fall several years ago. Margaret's neighbour, a compassionate and respectful man, supported and kept an eye on her. His view, however, was that Margaret would have resisted help from the services. The review suggests her lack of contact with adult social care shows an apparent lack of awareness within the Isle of Man of the support available. While the recommendations in the review amount to what's described as a substantial agenda, Manx Care says it's focused on strengthening safeguarding adults across health and social care, And in response to this review, the health body has announced plans to establish a multi-agency safeguarding hub, or MASH, in collaboration with the Isle of Man Constabulary. MASH organisations are common in the UK, and it's hoped a Manx hub will help connect the links between the different support networks available on the Isle of Man to ensure no one slips through the cracks. Manx Care is also developing wellbeing partnership hubs across the island for agencies to coordinate care. Well, in many of the cases, the review found practitioners were often reluctant to put in recommendations or referrals to other agencies, something the Safeguarding Board told me it's keen to amend, insisting no member of staff should ever have hesitations about making a judgment call if they're concerned for someone's welfare. Professional curiosity, it said, is something the board is keen to encourage and emphasise within healthcare. I had the opportunity to attend a briefing back in October when this report was first published and was able to speak to members of the Safeguarding Board. Leslie Walker is the body's independent chair.
So what we're hoping from this review today is to A, promote some of the messages around self-neglect, how serious it can be. I mean, it led to the deaths, clearly, of all these individuals. We're trying to get out key messages around safeguarding as everyone's responsibility on the island. These individuals were in plain sight of their communities, and we really want to take forward the work, the recommendations that are recommended in the report. We have a planned work schedule around all of those in terms of training staff, training all sectors, getting out some further communications across the island in terms of how to recognise self-neglect, what to do if you see it. But we really want that message to get out today to members of communities, neighbours and families. If you've got a concern about your loved one or your neighbour, or you see something you're concerned about and you feel someone might be self-neglecting, please do make contact with the agencies, with the Adult Safeguarding Agency in Manx Care, or with the police if there's an immediate concern about someone's welfare.
And it's worth saying, what do we mean by self-neglect?
So self-neglect can manifest itself in a number of ways, but what we see is that people start to deteriorate in terms of their day-to-day health, in terms of their well-being. So they'll often look in a disheveled state. Often their clothes, etc., will deteriorate. Their day-to-day living circumstances. So we saw in the review cases there were major issues about their properties that had deteriorated to a very significant extent. We're talking about trees growing through doors and windows, missing roofs in some cases. So that will be transparent. We can also see sometimes the individuals will become more reclusive. In a majority of the cases, we saw very significant hoarding. So including, food, there were rats and rodents within some of the properties. So, very significant levels of self-neglect, hoarding that was a fire risk, and those things were quite noticeable, as I said, to those that would be in contact and even within the community. One of the instances actually where the death was sadly discovered was when the skylight of the house fell into the street, and somebody phoned the police and they went in and found that person deceased in the house. So very sad circumstances that we can work with and make an impact on if we know about those situations.
And you described Robin, the first case in this review, as the primary case, I suppose. Tell us why there's that extra emphasis on his living standards and what happened to him.
Okay. Robin became the primary case. His case was the only one that technically met the criteria for serious case management review under the guidance, the Isle of Man Safeguarding Together guidance. And his situation was particularly concerning because he was known to a number of agencies, and those agencies didn't appear to have worked effectively to make a real impact on Robin's situation. So we felt in depth we needed to really pick that apart, explore and look at what were the barriers in being able to make a difference. Why was the situation allowed to persist? What people could have done differently. And the review clearly found that there was a lack of really coming round the table and discussing the situation. There were some misconceptions in the Isle of Man about information sharing, as we've mentioned, when can I share information? And we're very clear that information can be shared for safeguarding purposes with whoever we need to be around the table. So it picked apart Robin's case in detail and looked at how we could improve practice and led to the recommendations that have come out of the report today.
And to put it starkly, he was first contacted by services in 2001, died December 2021, I believe. So that's 20 years that services were just unable to help him and change his circumstances. I mean, that must be quite harrowing to read.
I mean, it's a very sad case. We're very clear, and when we involved Robin's relative in the review, she was very, very clear that had he been removed from his house, he probably would not have survived. He was fiercely independent and adamant that he wanted to remain in his own home. And of course, there are limited options open to agencies to be able to take legal action in those sorts of cases. We heard today from the Department for Health and Social Care about how they're progressing the mental capacity legislation, which will help staff in assessing whether people do have the mental capacity in order to make decisions when they're living in those sorts of circumstances. But if they do have the mental capacity, it is very, very difficult. We are balancing risk all the time, and people do have a right to self-determine, to live their lives in the way that they want to, unless it's causing harm and they don't have that capacity. So it's very difficult, and everybody felt that Robin did have capacity at the time, but there was no formal assessment of that. And the capacity assessment has been enhanced and improved at the minute, and the mental capacity legislation will make a huge difference in helping us assess those situations.
Something that struck me when reading Robin's case, and you mentioned something there about how independent he was and how determined he was to stay in his own home. And I mean, that is quite a common theme amongst anybody, not just those who we see with self-neglect, but with cases of most people when they get to that age. How common is that throughout these cases?
Well, it was the case in all of the cases that where those individuals felt that either people were interfering or wanting to change how they were living their lives, that you know, they effectively withdrew in many circumstances. But what the review highlights is how we can work together to get opportunities to try to make the living circumstances of those individuals better. Nobody's talking here about wanting to remove individuals from their homes or take away their rights. But we don't want people dying in such terrible circumstances, where they're freezing to death, they don't have adequate electric or heating. Nobody should have to live in that sort of that level of chaos or deteriorating circumstance. So we want to support people to remain in their own homes. We want to ensure that they can and that they get the support necessary to do that.
And it's easy to say, I suppose, oh, they're set in their ways, these people, they're a character. How do you combat that as well and not become, as is put in the review, desensitised to it?
Yeah. It's all about, as the review highlighted, building relationships, finding a way in. Who is the best person, perhaps a family member, a neighbour, who might be able to talk that person into receiving additional help or support? Just trying to find a way in, just chipping away, just never giving up on the situation, and then thinking about how people can use potentially... Can they use legislation? Can they use different ways? Robin's example, I think a good one was, that he was anxious about paying for his care, even though he had the money to pay for it. And the Manx Care Adult Social Care Executive Director has said today that obviously, we can look at those situations and think about, well, what extra support can we put in over and above what's already been provided. So there are things that can be done to enhance and support a package of care and a package of intervention that might make a real difference in a person's life.
And looking forward, there's the MASH being established, I believe, 1st of November. Did you say that the efforts were going to start on that? Tell us how welcome that will be and what your hopes are in terms of delivering these services, how they'll change in the future.
Yes. So the MASH is a multi-agency safeguarding hub. Will bring together all of the agencies in one place, sharing real-time information. When referrals come in the door, it allows people to put the jigsaw pieces together of the different bits of information that they might have, with the hope that that will make a real impact then on intervening earlier, being able to know more about the background of the situations, as I say, put all those pieces together and make sure that they're able to safeguard that person at the earliest opportunity. Just to highlight again that safeguarding is everybody's responsibility. If there's anyone out there today that has a concern about any individual, a friend, a neighbour, a family member, or in fact the individual themselves who are saying, my life feels out of control, I feel I need some support, I need some help to help sort things out, please don't be afraid to step forward. We want to help those individuals before. We don't want to be in a position that we're at some further review leading and hearing about sad circumstances with someone that may have died where we could have helped support and improve the day-to-day living situation.
Leslie Walker from the Safeguarding Board there. Well, the Department of Infrastructure's Housing Department intends to develop the current housing support offering as a potential intervention point to identify those struggling with self-neglect, but this will need political support. The Department of Health and Social Care is also working to bring in new legislation on mental capacity to assist practitioners in determining whether individuals have the capacity to make their own decisions.
Stuart Quayle, the Interim Chief Executive of the Department of Health and Social Care. So the capacity bill is currently before the Legislative Council. It goes before the Legislative Council next week. It's gone through the House of Keys. It was introduced in May. So it goes through its remaining stages. And then the key there is for it to get royal assent, which we're anticipating will be about next April or thereabouts. But the big piece of work the department's doing once the bill goes through that Legislative Council is around the implementation. Because we're very keen that the Act, as it will then be, is fit for purpose, it's implemented as effectively and as quickly as possible, and importantly that the professionals who are impacted by it are properly trained and are properly aware of the new provisions, and more broadly because of the context and the content of the bill, that the public are aware of what changes have been brought in, so that there's a bigger awareness that the members of the public know that there is new capacity legislation and what they can do under it and what changes there will be. So there's an internal aspect to it and also a more public aspect to it.
And explain to us what is actually meant by capacity, mental capacity.
Well, mental capacity is effectively around whether or not you're able to make decisions for your own, for yourself. So the bill, the revised bill now has the definitions around mental capacity, it has overarching principles about mental capacity, and it also has a clear framework for individuals and agencies to be able to operate when they're dealing with capacity issues for friends, family or individuals.
And when we look at those cases, obviously there was a lot of time mentioned about self-determination and the fact that actually these people lived how they did because they wanted to at the time, or they seemed to want to. So this is about being able to find those other avenues to serve this person's best interest.
Yeah, indeed. And I think some of these sad cases that we learned about, that I'm hearing about this morning in the review, it's not about whether or not they had or they didn't have capacity, because it didn't actually get to the stage where their capacity was assessed. So I see it as a front end where agencies can come together, and we've heard about the risk assessments, the professional curiosity and all those aspects, which means that almost at the front end these people are better assessed and seen by the various agencies, and the agencies take a much more holistic approach to their interactions with these people. And then the capacity legislation would kick in for those that are deemed not to have capacity later on. So it's a kind of it's a process where there's a front end, and then obviously in those instances where there are as an individual that lacks capacity, they will then kind of benefit from the provisions of the new bill.
And just to go over that timeline, so a year as of today, we're hoping to have this sort of implemented.
I very much hope so, yes. obviously all the agencies involved have got a big in-tray of things that they have to do, but this is a clear priority. It's something that's been a long-standing priority for the government for a long time. It's a complicated piece of legislation. It involves a lot of different moving parts, so the challenge that the department has working with Manx Care and others is to make sure those moving parts are brought together and that the Act is implemented as speedily and as effectively as possible, because as we've heard today, ultimately there's vulnerable individuals that are at stake here, and it's incumbent on all stakeholders to make sure that the efforts they put into it mean that the legislation is as effective as soon as possible.
The DHSC's Stuart Quayle there. Well, the Isle of Man's Chief Constable is urging people to report any concerns they have about someone in the community who may be struggling to look after themselves. Gary Roberts believes there will be people on the island living like this right now, and it's up to us to keep an eye on them.
Gary Roberts, Chief Constable. Police have had limited involvement in these cases, sometimes none at all. Sadly, our involvement in all of them came at the end when people were found dead in very, very distressing circumstances. So This is less about policing and more about how the community and social services, and I use the police as a social service in this terms, work together. Because every one of the seven people was known in the community, and they were known to neighbours, they were known to relatives, they were known just to strangers. But they stood out because of the way they lived their lives. So sometimes they were unkempt and they were clearly dirty, sometimes they were clearly lonely. Many of them lived in very difficult circumstances that were known to people around them. And this issue then is about how we as a community, not just the constabulary or the social services or health services, but we as a community spot these people and try to intervene to help them. Now, some of them will want to live their lives like that and will really not want the attention that we can give them, but some won't. And some won't know how to get the help and will be afraid to do that. So the role of the constabulary is the same as the role of 80-odd thousand people here, to look out for who these people are and to report concerns. And if it's an immediate concern, if it's there's post on the doorstep, there's the milk bottles, the curtains are drawn, ring the police. People should ring the police and we'll respond and deal with it. If it's just something doesn't seem right, or people have a concern about somebody they know in the community or people they've seen in the community, then they can go in to the adult safeguarding team, the duty social workers in Manx Care, and they'll get a response. And it's so sad. I mean, the way these people have lived their lives, it is desperate, desperately sad. And in terms of the police, we've become a sort of social service. We operate often in the space between other services. And that's fine, because that's how modern society is. And we will respond and do our best for these people. On one of the cases, a local community officer had done shopping for the person, cutting their grass, and had tried his best to get them the help that they wanted. So community police officers are very important. They'll play an important part of this. But this is about our whole society in the Isle of Man.
And the multi-agency safeguarding hub, what we've heard about MASH, from the 1st of November, I believe, being established. How will that change how community officers, like you say, can pass on to other information to other agencies? You mentioned there's a real need for more information to be shared.
There are two aspects to anything like this serious case review, and that is how professionals are curious, so how they exhibit their curiosity. So when they're presented with something, what do they think? Do they just accept things on face value, or do they say, that doesn't seem right, and test it and go behind and try and dig deeper to find out what's happening? So professional curiosity was absent in some of these cases when people were open to services. But the critical factor in these, as is often the case, is the sharing of information. And lots of work has been done by the Safeguarding Board to give confidence to professionals to share information better, and we've seen real improvements around that. But professionals need to have the confidence to share, and sharing doesn't cause people to come to harm. People come to harm if information isn't shared.
And regarding the community's role in all this, you mentioned about 80,000 eyes on each other. The Isle of Man, obviously, we're very tight-knit here. You mentioned it yourself, seeing people walking around, you know them within the community. So you want to push that message, don't you, that you should report to the police and there's no harm in doing so?
If we think we're a close community, and we are, then we should care for each other. And caring for each other sometimes means picking a phone up and saying, listen, I'm really concerned about that little old lady who lives around the corner, or that man who's we no longer see because we know his dog has died and he's become a recluse. that's the sort of thing a close community does. It looks out for each other. And in the modern world, sometimes it's easy to turn away. Well, we're asking people not to turn away. We're asking people to share their concerns about the people around them.
And you said something quite stark about how you believe there could be other people living like this right now.
I think the biggest question that arises out of this review is not the work the services need to do and the work the community needs to do. It's this fundamental thing, is how many other people out there now in similar circumstances who really desperately need help but aren't accessing that help. And this is where the community comes in. We need to hear the concerns.
I've been Lewis Foster. Thank you for listening to this episode of Newscast. If anyone listening recognises that they may require support, or if a family member or the public have any concerns about someone who may be self-neglecting, advice and support is available by contacting the Adult Safeguarding Team at asteam@gov.im or by telephone on 685 969 or 650 000, and asking for the on-call duty social worker. Or you can call police on 631 212 if you have an immediate welfare concern.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.